rag off her cigarette. A clock ticked somewhere in the house. The water from the driveway fountain continued its rhythmic sound.
So, Henry's fingers tapped against his knee. Wilbur,
his fingers stopped tapping. He looked down at his hand.
Was there anything else? I was about to head off to the club.
Amanda asked.
How old would Lucy be now?
Henry kept staring at his hand.
53?
56, Will said. Henry straightened his leg. He reached into his pants pocket and pulled out a pair of fingernail clippers.
Wilbur, I was thinking about your mother the other day.
He swiveled the handle.
I suppose news of Ulster's parole put her in my mind.
Will felt that familiar clamp start to tighten around his chest.
Lucy had this friend, not a pretty girl, but very demure.
Henry lined up the clipper to his thumbnail and pressed the handles together.
I'll hazard, Lucy was a bad example for her. That's neither here nor there.
He placed the cut fingernail on the table beside the ashtray and started on the next nail.
At any rate, the summer I was home from school, I would hear them giggling in Lucy's room, listening to records. One day I went in to see what all the racket was and caught them dancing in front of a mirror, singing into their hair brushes.
He put the second nail by the first.
Isn't that silly?
Will watched him clip the nail of his middle finger. Henry flinched as he cut too close. Still, he managed to remove the tip in one piece. He put the crescent-shaped nail beside the others. When he looked up from his work, he seemed surprised that they were watching him.
I suppose that's not an interesting anecdote. I just assumed you'd want to know something about your mother.
Amanda asked.
Do you remember Evelyn Mitchell?
He grunted at the name.
Vaguely. You know, Evelyn was determined to track Ulster's money,
she told Will.
This was before the Miami cocaine heyday, when the government started requiring banks to report large deposits.
Henry tucked the clippers back into his pocket.
Is there a point to this?
Amanda picked up her purse from the floor. The bag was huge. She carried the world on her shoulder.
Ulster lived in a slum, but he had enough money to hire the top defense attorney in the southeast. It raised some questions. At least among some of us.
Henry's tone was arrogant.
Again, I don't know what this has to do with me. Ulster had a savings account at CNS Bank. We knew a gal there. She told us he had less than $20. He didn't use a dime of it to pay his lawyer.
Henry said, he owned property.
Yes. A house in Techwood that he sold in 1995 for $4 million.
She unzipped her purse.
He was the last holdout. I'm sure the city was pleased when he finally accepted.
Henry sounded annoyed.
A lot of people made money off the Olympics. Ulster certainly did.
Amanda took a latex glove out of her purse. As usual, she wiped her palm on her skirt. With her arm in a sling, it was more difficult to push her fingers into the latex, but she managed to pull on the glove, and then she reached into her purse again and pulled out his father's Bible. Henry laughed when she placed the book on the coffee table.
Are we going to pray for Ulster's soul?
Amanda opened the Bible.
Here's your mistake, Hank.
He studied the envelope. One shoulder went up in a shrug.
So, this is addressed to James Ulster at the Atlanta jail.
She pointed to the name.
And this logo says Treadwell Price, your law firm.
Will was past the point where he could be surprised by Amanda's lies. Less than an hour ago, she'd told him that the letter was from his father's defense attorney.
So,
Henry shrugged his shoulder again.
There's nothing inside.
Amanda asked,
"Isn't there?"
"No, there's not." He seemed very sure of himself.
Obviously, I wrote him a letter giving him a piece of my mind. The man murdered my sister. You can't prove otherwise.
I can prove what a lazy pig you are.
He gave her a sharp look.
Where do you...
You gave this envelope to your girl to type.
He glanced at his wife, but Elizabeth was staring at Amanda. She was smiling again, but there was no warmth in her expression. Amanda asked,
Do you see your name typed above the Treadwell Price logo?
She turned the Bible so Henry could see it.
That's what you're supposed to do when you send out a business correspondence. They teach you that in secretarial school.
My secretary passed away years ago.
I'm sorry for your loss.
She turned the Bible back around.
The thing about those old typewriters, and you wouldn't know this, is the rollers were heavy. If you weren't careful, you could pinch your fingers between them.
Henry straightened the nail clippings on the table. He used the tips of his fingers to move them around.
Again, I ask for your point. The point is, you had to line up the envelope just right so the address wouldn't come out crooked. Sometimes you had to twist the envelope back and forth between the rollers to get it straight. It's almost like an old printing press, where you turn the screw to press the ink onto the sheet of paper. Do you still use a fountain pen?
Henry froze. He finally seemed to get it.
The ink wasn't dry when you put the check inside.
Amanda carefully pinched open the paper.
So, when your girl pressed the envelope between those two heavy rollers, the ink on the check transferred to the inside of the envelope. This envelope.
She smiled.
Your name, your signature, your money paid to the order of Herman Centrello, the defense attorney working for the man who murdered your sister.
Henry took out his nail clippers again.
That's hardly a smoking gun.
He kept it all these years,
Amanda said.
But Ulster was like that, wasn't he? How should I know what... He didn't care about the money. It was a means to an end. He lived to control people. I bet every time he opened this Bible, all he could think about was how easily one word to the right snitch, one phone call to the right lawyer, could turn your world upside down.
You have no proof that...
You licked the envelope flap to seal the letter, didn't you, Hank? I don't imagine you'd let your girl do that for you. She might wonder why you're sending such a sizable check to another law firm. Care of the man looking to be sent away for murdering your sister.
She smiled.
It must have galled you to have to lick your own envelope. How many times has that happened over the years?
Henry looked frightened, then angry.
You don't have my DNA to compare.
Don't I?
Amanda leaned forward.
Were you ever scratched, Hank? Did Jane scratch you on the arm or chest while you were strangling her?
He stood up so fast the chair fell over.
I'd like for you to leave now. Wilbur, I'm sorry you've entangled yourself with this.
He cast about for a word.
Lunacy.
Will unbuttoned his collar. The room was suffocating. Amanda took off the glove.
You worked out a deal with Ulster, didn't you, Hank? He got what he wanted. You got what you wanted.
I'm calling the police.
He walked to his desk. His hand rested on the phone.
Out of deference to Wilbur, I'm giving you one last opportunity to leave.
All right.
Amanda took her time standing. She straightened her sling. She lugged her purse onto her shoulder. But she didn't head directly for the door. First, she stopped by Henry's overturned chair. She took the fingernail clippings off the side table. Henry demanded,
What are you doing?
I always wondered about Jane. She wasn't killed like the other girls. She didn't have the marks on her body. She was strangled and beaten. You tried to make it look like a suicide, but you were too stupid to know that we could tell the difference.
Henry didn't speak. He eyed the fingernails in Amanda's hand.
Jane was telling anyone who would listen about the missing girls, so you used Treadwell's name to pull some strings down at the station house. You thought Jane would be afraid of the police.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You've never understood women, have you, Hank? All you did was piss Jane off and make her talk more.
Amanda opened her hand. The fingernails fell to the carpet.
Henry nearly jumped across the desk. He caught himself at the last minute, telling his wife, "Pick those up, immediately."
Elizabeth seemed to debate her answer.
"Oh, I don't think so, Henry. Not today."
"We'll talk about this later."
He angrily punched the numbers on the phone.
"I'm calling the police."
"They're right outside,"
Amanda told him.
"The envelope is enough to arrest you. I know a gal at the lab who's just dying to get her hands on your DNA."
"I told you to leave." Henry hung up the receiver and picked it back up again.
Instead of dialing 3 digits, he dialed 10. He was calling his lawyer.
Elizabeth said, "You're nothing like him, you know."
She wasn't talking to Amanda or Henry. She was talking to Will.
"There's a kindness about you," she said. "James was terrifying. He didn't have to speak or move, or even breathe. Just being in his presence was like staring into the pit of hell."
Will stared at the ugly shape of her mouth.
"He said he wanted to save them. Funny how none of them actually lived up to his promise."
Elizabeth inhaled deeply from the cigarette. "He gave Lucy a chance, at least. A chance to do something good, to bring something pure into the world."
Will asked, "What are you saying?" "Girls don't matter. They never matter."
Her red lipstick had wicked into the deep lines around her mouth.
"But you, handsome boy, you were saved from James. Saved from his brutality, his madness. You were our salvation."
"I hope you've earned it."
Will watched her round off the ash of her cigarette in the ashtray. Her nails were long, painted in a flame red that matched her skirt and sweater.
Amanda said, "They were working together, weren't they?"
"Not like you're thinking," she answered. "Yes, Hank had some fun, but I'm sure you've noticed that he doesn't like to get his hands dirty."
Henry ordered,
"Shut up! Right now!"
She ignored him, telling Will, "He didn't really want you, but he didn't want anyone else to have you either." She paused.
"I'm sorry about that. I really am."
"I'm warning you, Elizabeth."
Henry's voice was terse, sweat rolled down the side of his face. She continued to ignore her husband, staring at Will with what could only be described as a sinister smile.
"He'd get you from the children's home and bring you here for a day, 2 days at a time. I would hear you downstairs playing, inasmuch as a child can play without touching anything. Sometimes I would hear you laugh. You loved rolling down that hill. You'd do it for hours, down and up again, laughing the whole time. I would start to feel attached to you, and then Henry would take you away, and I was alone again."
"I don't." Will had to stop to catch his breath.
"I don't remember you."
She held the cigarette to her mouth, her lipstick ringed the filter.
"You wouldn't. I only saw you once."
She gave a soft laugh.
"The other times I was tied up."
The tinny sound of a woman's voice came through the telephone receiver in Henry's hand. He stood, holding it from his ear, staring at his wife. Elizabeth told Will,
"It could have just as easily been me, you know. I could have been your mother. I could have..."
Amanda hissed,
"Shut up, kitty."
She blew out a stream of smoke. The tendrils swirled up into her thin blonde hair.
"Bitch, was I talking to you?"
30. July 15, 1975.
There was definitely a noise. A banging sound, tapping. Amanda wasn't sure. The house was full of men tromping around in heavy shoes, yelling across the rooms. The attic stairs were pulled down. Someone was checking the crawl space. They could see the beam of a Kell light through the planks in the hardwood floor. Amanda stood in the hallway.
"Shut up!" she yelled. "Everyone just shut up!"
The men stared at her, not quite knowing what to do. Amanda heard the noise again. It was coming from the kitchen. Evelyn pushed past the crowd, fighting to get to the back of the house.
"Hey," one of them complained.
Amanda followed her into the kitchen. The cabinets were metal. The white laminate countertop had a gold swirl pattern. The appliances dated back to the 30s. The overhead light was a single bulb, the same as in the other rooms.
"Do you hear it?"
Evelyn kept her jaw tight. The lump was dark red now, taking up the lower half of her face. Amanda closed her eyes and listened. There was no banging, no tapping, nothing. Finally, she shook her head. Evelyn let out a long sigh.
The men in the house had lost their patience. They started talking in low voices that got louder as more of their compatriots arrived on the scene. The front door was wide open. Amanda could see into the street. An ambulance had arrived. The medic jumped out of the back and headed toward the house. A patrolman stopped him and pointed toward the driveway. James Ulster was still alive. She could hear him moaning through the open window.
"Crawl space is clear," a voice called. "Somebody get me the hell out of here,"
Evelyn asked. "You heard it, right?"
"Yes."
Amanda leaned against the counter. They both stood there, ears straining for the noise. And then they heard it again. Papers rustling. A thumping. It was coming from under the sink. Evelyn still had her gun. She held it in front of her. Amanda wrapped her hand around the cabinet knob. She silently mouthed the countdown. 1, 2, 3. And opened the door. No one jumped out. No bullets were fired. Evelyn shook her head. Nothing. Amanda looked into the cabinet. It was much like her own. On one side were the usual cleaning supplies. Bleach, a few rags, furniture polish. On the other side was a large kitchen trash can. It was wedged under the sink, almost too big for the space. Amanda was about to close the door, but the trash can moved.
"Jesus," Evelyn whispered. Her hand went to her chest. "It's probably a rat."
They both looked down the hallway. There were at least 30 men on scene. Evelyn whispered,
"I'm terrified of rats."
Amanda wasn't crazy about them either, but she wasn't about to erase everything they'd done tonight by asking some big, strong man to help them. The trash can moved again. She heard a noise that sounded like a cough.
"Oh, my God."
Evelyn dropped her gun on the counter. She got to her knees and tried to pull out the trash can.
"Help me."
Amanda grabbed the top of the plastic can. She yanked as hard as she could. The edge came free, and she saw two eyes staring up at her. Almond-shaped. Blue. Eyelids as thin as tissue paper. The baby blinked. His upper lip formed a perfect triangle as he smiled up at Amanda. She felt an ache in her heart, as if he was pulling on an invisible string between them. His tiny hands, the fat little dots of his curled toes.
"Oh, God,"
Evelyn whispered. She wedged her fingers between the trash can and cabinet, trying to bend back the plastic.
"Oh, God."
Amanda reached down to the baby. She cupped her hand to his face. His cheek was warm. He turned his head, leaning into her palm. His hand brushed against hers. His feet came up. They curved, as if he was pressing against an invisible ball.
He was so impossibly small. And so perfect. So beautiful.
I've got it. With one last pull, Evelyn finally freed the trash can. She picked up the boy, holding him close to her chest.
Little lamb, she murmured, pressing her lips to his head. Poor little lamb.
From nowhere, Amanda felt a flash of jealousy. Tears sprang into her eyes, blurring her vision, blinding her. And then came the rage. Of all the horrors Amanda had seen in the last week, this was the worst. How had this happened? Who had thrown away this child? Amanda. It was Dina Coolidge. The scarf around her neck was blue. She had a white lab coat on.
Ev, what happened? Are you two okay?
Amanda's bare feet slapped against the floor as she stalked out of the kitchen. She was running by the time she reached the front door. They were loading Ulster into the ambulance. She bolted into the street and pushed the medic out of her way. Ulster was strapped down to the gurney. His wrists were handcuffed to the metal stiles. His clothes had been cut open. A bloody bandage was taped to his side, another to his leg. Gauze was wrapped around his arm. His throat was as red as Evelyn's jaw. The EMT said, "We need to trach him. He's not getting enough air."
"We found him," Amanda told Ulster. "We beat you. I beat you."
Ulster's wet lips curved into a self-satisfied smile. He could barely breathe, but he was still laughing at her.
Amanda Wagner, Evelyn Mitchell, Dina Coolidge, Cindy Murray, Pam Canali, Holly Scott, you remember those names. You remember the names of the women who brought you down.
Air wheezed from Ulster's mouth, but he was shaking with laughter, not fear. She had seen the look in his eyes a million times before. From her father, from Butch and Landry, from Bubba Keller. He was amused. He was humoring her.
"All right, doll. Run along now."
Amanda stood on the bottom rung of the gurney so she could loom over Ulster the same way he had loomed over her.
"You're never going to see him."
He blinked as her spit flew into his eye. "He'll never know you. I swear before God, he'll never know what you did." Ulster's smile would not fade. He took a deep breath, then another. His voice was a strangled gasp.
"We'll see."
31. July 23rd, 1975. 1 week later. Amanda smiled as she pulled into the parking lot of the Zone 1 station house. A month ago, she would have laughed if someone suggested that she'd be happy to be back here. A week of crossing guard duty had taught her a hard lesson. She took one of the far spaces in the back of the lot. The engine knocked when she turned the key. Amanda checked the time. Evelyn was running late. Amanda should go inside the squad and wait for her, but she was thinking of this as their triumphant return. Having to spend 5 days in the grueling heat, dressed in a wool uniform, while lazy children tromped in and out of traffic, had not negated the fact that they had caught a killer. Amanda unzipped her purse. She took out the last report she was ever going to type for Butch Bonney. She hadn't done it out of kindness. She'd done it because she needed to make sure it was right. Wilbur Trent. Amanda had named the baby because no one else would. Hank Bennett did not want to sully his family's name. Or perhaps he didn't want the legal entanglement of Lucy having an heir. Evelyn had been right about the insurance policies. With Hank Bennett's parents dead and his sister murdered, he was now the sole beneficiary to their estate. He'd let the city bury his sister in a pauper's grave, while he walked away from probate court a millionaire. So it fell to Amanda to buy Wilbur his first blanket, his first
tiny t-shirt. Leaving him at the children's home had been the most difficult thing Amanda had ever done in her life. More difficult than facing down James Ulster. More difficult than finding her mother hanging dead from a tree. She would keep her promise to Ulster. The child would never know his father. He would never know that his mother was a junkie and a whore. Amanda had never written fiction before. She was nervous about the details she'd put into Butch's report, the blatant lies she'd told about Lucy Bennett's life before her abduction. The boy could never know. Something good had to come out of all this misery. "What's the skinny?" Evelyn stood outside the car. She was dressed in brown slacks and a checkered orange shirt that buttoned up the front. The bruise on her jaw had started to yellow, but it still blackened the bottom half of her face. Amanda asked, "Why are you dressed like a man?"
"If we're going to be running around the city, I'm not going to ruin another pair of perfectly good pantyhose."
"I don't plan on doing much running anymore."
Amanda tucked the report back into her purse. She zipped the bag closed quickly. She didn't want Evelyn to see the application she'd requested from the Georgia Bureau of Investigation. Her father had gotten his old job back. Captain Wilbur Wagner would be running Zone 1 again by the end of the month. Evelyn frowned sympathetically as Amanda got out of the car.
"Did you go by the children's home again this morning?"
Amanda didn't answer.
"I need to wash my hands."
Evelyn followed her to the back of the Plaza Theater. Amanda gave a heavy sigh.
"I only said that so you would leave me alone."
Evelyn held open the exit door, releasing the pornographic grunts of Vixen Volleyball. The two men standing in the lobby looked very startled to see them. "Your wives send their regards," Evelyn told them, heading toward the bathroom. Amanda shook her head as she followed.
"You're going to get a shot one of these days."
Evelyn picked up their earlier conversation.
"Sweetie, you can't keep looking in on him every day. Babies need to bond with people. You don't want him getting attached to you."
Amanda turned on the faucet. She looked down at her hands as she washed them. That was exactly what she wanted with Wilbur. But she couldn't quite bring herself to say the words. It was hopeless. She was 25 and single. There was no way the state would let her adopt. And they were probably right not to. Evelyn asked, "Did you get that slide with the skin on it from Pete?" She patted her face with cold water. She had the sealed evidence envelope in her purse.
"I still don't know why it matters."
"Pete's right about the science. They can't use it now, but maybe one day."
She added,
"You don't want it getting lost in lockup. They'll throw it out in 5 years.
Amanda turned off the sink.
"If we had the death penalty, none of this would matter."
"Amen." Evelyn took her compact out of her purse. "Where are you going to put the envelope?"
"I have no idea."
She couldn't very well walk into the bank and ask for a safe deposit box without Duke's signature.
"How about your gun safe?"
"It should stay with the baby. Get Edna to hide it somewhere."
She smiled. "Make sure she doesn't lock it in the pantry." Amanda laughed. Edna Flanagan had a reputation around child services, but she was a good woman who cared about the kids. She had taken a shine to Wilbur. Amanda could tell. He was an easy baby to love.
"Can I have one of your textbooks?"
Evelyn stopped powdering her nose.
"Why?"
"Edna said we could leave some stuff for the baby to have when he grows up. I thought we could."
Evelyn knew about the story of Lucy Bennett, star student. She'd helped craft it, giving some inside details about Georgia Tech so the lies seemed more plausible.
"If I give you one of my statistics books, will you promise to stop moping?"
"I'm not moping."
Evelyn snapped her compact closed.
"We need to talk about our next case."
"What's that?"
"The DNF. We can look into those murders."
"Are you forgetting Landry's the one who got us busted to crossing guards?"
Duke had found him out in 2 phone calls. Landry was drinking buddies with a commander who'd signed off on the transfer. It wasn't a conspiracy so much as a male chauvinist pig who couldn't take two women trying to do his job. That's all we need to do is put ourselves in his crosshairs again.
I'm not afraid of that blowhard. She fluffed her hair in the mirror.
We saved a life, Amanda. We lost three, maybe four. God knew where Kitty Treadwell was. Probably buried in the city dump. Not that her father cared. Andrew Treadwell refused to return their phone calls, let alone admit that he had a second daughter. And neither one of us came out unscathed.
But we know people now. We have sources. We have a network. We can work cases just like the boys, even better.
Amanda could only stare at her. The grunting sounds from the porn movie only added to the ridiculousness of her statement.
Is there anything you can't put a positive spin on?
Hitler, world hunger.
Redheads, I just don't trust them.
Evelyn checked her makeup again. Amanda did the same, frowning at what she saw. Evelyn wasn't the only one who was bruised. Amanda's neck was still ringed dark from Ulster's hands. Her ribs were tender to the touch. The cuts on her palms and the soles of her feet were just starting to scab. Evelyn caught her eye in the mirror. War wounds. They were both smiling as they left the bathroom. Evelyn asked,
"Did I tell you about that Green Beret in North Carolina who murdered his entire family?"
"Yes."
Amanda held up her hand to stop her.
"Twice. I would rather talk about the case again than hear the details. Thank you very much."
The lobby was empty. Evelyn stopped. She put her hands on her hips.
"You know the insurance policies still bother me."
Hank Bennett. She couldn't let it go. Evelyn pressed.
"Bennett went to the mission looking for Lucy.
It follows that he'd end up at the soup kitchen and meet James Ulster."
"Maybe they met, but to say they were working together?"
Amanda shook her head.
"Why? What would be the point?"
"Bennett gets his sister out of the picture, so she can't inherit his parents' money. He keeps Kitty Treadwell for himself and her money because, you know, there has to be some."
"You think Hank Bennett's hiding Kitty somewhere?"
It wasn't a question. She'd been beating that dead horse all week.
"To what end?"
"To blackmail Andrew Treadwell."
She had a smile on her face.
"Mark my word, Hank Bennett's going to be running that firm one day."
Amanda sighed. She wondered if Evelyn's magazines were to blame for these crazy conspiracies.
"Kitty Treadwell is buried somewhere in a shallow grave. Ulster took them to kill them, not rehabilitate them."
"Someone put that baby in the trash can."
Amanda didn't have an answer for her. Part of Lucy's body was still sewn to the mattress when they found her. Pete Hansen couldn't give them an exact window for the time between Wilbur's birth and Lucy's death. They could only assume the girl had been free at some point and hidden the baby. And then Ulster had come home and sewn her back down? Evelyn said,
"I just feel like we're missing something."
Amanda didn't want to feed the flame, but she had the same bad feeling.
"Who else could have helped him?"
she asked. "Trey Callahan was caught in Biloxi with his fiancée. The man claimed that he'd only stolen the money from the mission in order to self-publish his book.
Obviously, Ulster was trying to frame Callahan with all that Ophelia stuff. Don't you think if there were a second killer, then Ulster would have framed that person instead?"
"How about this? Where's the money coming from?"
"Herman Centrello." Evelyn was determined to find out how James Ulster was paying for the best criminal defense lawyer in the Southeast. Amanda shook her head.
"Why does it matter? No lawyer in the world can get him out of this. Ulster was caught red-handed. His bloody fingerprints are on the knife."
"He'll skate on the other girls. We don't have anything to tie to Jane or Mary. We don't have Kitty's body, if it's out there. Ulster could eventually get paroled. That's why you need to hold on to that slide. Maybe the science will be ready for it by then."
"He'll be in his 60s. He'll be too old to walk, let alone hurt anybody."
Evelyn pushed open the exit door.
"And we'll be retired little grannies living with our husbands in Florida,
wondering why our children never call. Amanda wanted to hold on to that image. She wanted to think about it tonight when she tried to go to sleep, and all she could see was that condescending look in Ulster's eyes. He'd been laughing at her. He was holding something back, and he knew that it gave him power over everyone else. Evelyn asked, "Did Kenny call you?" Amanda let her blush be her answer. She adjusted her purse over her shoulder as they walked toward the station. There was a commotion going on by the front door. Two cops were wrangling with a wino. He already had a resisting arrest turban. His hands waved wildly as he was jerked back by his collar. Amanda said, "We actually wanted to come back to this." Evelyn looked at her watch. "Crap, we're late for roll call." So much for their triumphant return. Luther Hodge would probably put them on desk duty all week. Amanda hated filing. But at least she'd have Evelyn to commiserate with. Maybe they could look at some of the cases on the missing black girls. There was no harm in putting together another construction paper puzzle. "Hey!" The wino was still struggling as they walked to the entrance of the station. One of the patrolmen smacked him on the ear. The man's head jerked like a sling. The squad was as smoke-filled and dingy as usual. The room looked the same, crooked rows of tables crossing the room, white on one side, black on the other. Men in front, women in back. Hodge was at the podium. Everyone was seated for roll call. But, for some reason, they started to stand. First, it was some of the white detectives. Then, slowly, the blacks stood from their tables. It went around the room in a slow wave, ending with Vanessa Livingston, who, as usual, was sitting in the last row. She gave them both a thumbs up. Her teeth showed in a proud grin. Evelyn seemed momentarily stunned, but she kept her head high as she walked into the room. Amanda tried to do the same as she followed. The men cleared a path for them. No one spoke. They didn't whistle. They didn't make catcalls. Some of them nodded. Rick Landry was the only one who remained seated, but standing beside him was Butch Bonney, who seemed to have some grudging respect in his eyes. Then the moment was ruined as the wino was thrown into the squad room. He jumped up from the floor, screaming, "I'll sue you, motherfuckers!" The room tensed. The drunk's eyes widened as he realized he was facing down a room full of cops. He nervously glanced at Amanda, then Evelyn.
Excuse the language, ladies.
"Shit!" Butch took the toothpick out of his mouth.
"They ain't no ladies, fella. They're the police."
The room heaved a collective sigh. Jokes were passed around. The drunk was wrangled out the door. Hodge banged the podium for silence. Amanda fought the smile on her lips as she walked to the back of the room. She could feel Evelyn behind her, knew she was thinking the same thing. Finally, acceptance. 32. Present day. Wednesday. Will sat on the wooden bench at the top of the rolling hill. He rested his elbows on his knees. He looked down at the street as the police cruiser pulled out of the driveway. His father, a murderer. His uncle, a murderer. Will had it on both sides. Footsteps crunched across the gravel driveway. Amanda put her hand on his shoulder, but only to help herself sit. They both stared into the empty street. Seconds turned into minutes. Will could hear a white noise in his ears, a humming that made it impossible for his brain to hold on to any one thought. Amanda gave a heavy sigh.
"Evelyn's never going to let me live this down. She always thought there was someone else."
"Is she going to testify against him?"
"Kitty," Amanda shrugged with her good shoulder. "I doubt it. If she was going to talk, she would have done so years ago. I have a feeling she's still too much under Henry's control."
She gave a rueful laugh.
You've come a long way, baby.
Will couldn't pretend he was all right with all this. He couldn't brush off tragedy with a wry comment the way Amanda did.
Tell me what happened. The truth.
Amanda stared at the front lawn, the vast green space that was larger and better tended than most public parks. She obviously needed time to collect her thoughts. Honesty wasn't a natural act for Amanda Wagner. Will could tell it took effort. Finally, she said,
You know that there were two victims, your mother and Jane Delray.
Right. Will had found the reference in his father's file. There wasn't enough evidence to tie James Ulster to the murder of Jane Delray, but it was assumed that he was guilty of the act.
It was his pattern. He takes two and decides which one to keep. There were two other girls, Mary Halston and Kitty Treadwell.
Will gripped together his hands.
She said, Your mother and Mary Halston showed the same damage. The sewing, the needle marks. But Jane was different. She wasn't abducted. Her murder was spur of the moment. She was strangled, then thrown from the roof so that her death would look like a suicide.
Henry,
I wasn't sure until I saw that check. What I said was the absolute truth. It bothered Evelyn that Ulster had a high-priced lawyer. Frankly, it bothered me. Ulster was never interested in material things. He wanted control. And I guess making Hank mail him that check at the jail exerted some control.
Henry's going to skate on the envelope. You know the check isn't enough.
Henry's DNA is going to match evidence from Jane Delray's case. I called the gal who's in charge of archival evidence the minute I heard your father was out. It's a miracle the chain of custody was still intact, or we'd never be able to use it.
What's the evidence?
It's what I said in there. Jane scratched her attacker. It's going to match Henry's DNA from the envelope.
Are you sure of that?
Aren't you?
Will had seen his uncle's face. He was sure. What about Kitty?
I can only give an educated guess. Ulster got her off heroin. Hank kept her to leverage money out of Treadwell.
She nodded back toward the house.
Not a bad plan, as you can see.
Will looked at the house. Mansion wasn't even the right word for it. Museum, maybe. Prison.
Amanda asked, Is there anything else you want to know?
There was a lifetime of questions. Why are you making me pull teeth?
Because this is difficult for me too, Will.
He hadn't considered that. For all her bluster, Will knew that Amanda was close to this. Her first case, her first homicide, she tried to act like it was nothing. But the fact that they were both sitting here right now belied that assertion. Eventually, she said,
Hank always hated women. I imagine he hated Lucy for her independence, her free spirit. That she made choices for herself. She was going to school, living in Atlanta. Hank thought women should stay in their place. Most men did back then. Not all of them, but...
She shrugged her shoulder again.
All you need to know is that your mother was a good person. She was smart and independent, and she loved you.
A cable truck drove down the street. Will could hear the hum of the wheels on the road. He wondered what it felt like to live in a mansion, to watch the rest of the world pass you by. Amanda said,
Everyone I interviewed at the school loved her.
Will shook his head. He'd heard enough.
She was funny and kind. She was very popular. All of her professors were devastated when they heard what happened. She had great promise.
He tried to swallow the glass in his throat.
I was there when she died.
Amanda paused again.
Her last words were for you, Will. She said that she loved you. She wouldn't let go until she was certain we heard her. Until she knew that we understood that with every breath in her body, she loved you.
Will pressed his fingers into his eyes. He wasn't going to cry in front of her. There would be no going back from that.
She hid you in the trash can to save you from your father.
Amanda paused.
Evelyn was there. We found you together. I don't think I've ever been so angry in my life, not before or since.
Will swallowed again. He had to clear his throat to speak.
Edna Flanagan? You knew her. A lot of my cases took me to the children's home.
Amanda adjusted the strap on her sling.
No one told me she'd passed away. When I found out,
she looked Will straight in the eye.
Trust me, her replacement was duly punished for his actions.
Will couldn't help but take some pleasure in the thought of Amanda annihilating the man who'd kicked him out into the street.
What was in the basement? What were you looking for?
She stared back at the lawn, letting out a long sigh.
I wonder if we'll ever know.
Will remembered the scratches in the coal chute. He'd assumed they had been made by an animal, but now he knew it was probably one of Amanda's old broads.
Someone went back there while we were at the hospital.
Really?
Amanda pretended to be surprised. Will tried to let her know he wasn't a complete idiot. There was no way a slide had been in police custody for 37 years.
Archival evidence?
Archival evidence?
She had an infuriating smile on her lips, and he knew she was back in full dissembling mode before she even opened her mouth.
Never heard of it.
Cindy Murray, he continued. Will's caseworker, the woman who'd helped him get off the streets and into college.
Murray.
Amanda drew out the name, finally shaking her head.
Doesn't ring a bell.
Captain Scott at the jail.
She chuckled.
Remind me to tell you stories about the old jail sometime. It was awful before Holly cleaned it up.
Rachel Foster.
Amanda still called on the federal judge to sign off on her warrants.
I know you're friends with her.
Rachel and I came up together. She worked dispatch, the night shift, so she could go to law school during the day.
She expunged my record when I graduated from college.
Amanda would only say,
Rachel's a good gal.
Will couldn't help himself. He had to find at least one crack.
I've never known you to go on another GBI recruiting trip. Not once in 15 years. Just the one where you got me to sign up.
Well.
She adjusted the sling again.
No one really enjoys those trips. You talk to 50 people and half of them are illiterate.
She smiled at him.
Not that that's a bad thing.
Did I get it from him?
He couldn't look at her. Amanda knew about his dyslexia.
My problem?
No,
she spoke with certainty.
You saw his Bible he was constantly reading.
That girl, Susanna Ford, she saw
a tall man. That's all.
You're nothing like him, Will. I knew James Ulster. I talked to him. I looked him in the eye. There's not a drop of your father inside of you. It's all Lucy. Everything about you comes straight from your mother. You have to believe me on that, at least. I wouldn't waste my time on you otherwise.
Will clasped his hands in front of him. The grass was lush beneath his feet. His mother would be 56 years old now. Maybe she would have been an academic. Her textbooks were well read. Words were underlined. Asterisks were scribbled in the margins. She might have been an engineer, or mathematician, or a feminist scholar. He had spent so many hours with Angie talking about the what-ifs. What if Lucy had lived? What if Angie's mom hadn't taken that overdose? What if they hadn't grown up in the home? What if they'd never met each other? But his mother had died. So had Angie's. Though it had taken longer. They'd both grown up in the home. They'd been connected to each other for nearly 3 decades. Their anger was like a magnet between them. Sometimes it pulled them together. Most times it pushed them apart. Will had seen what it took to hold on to resentment that long. He read it in Kitty Treadwell's emaciated body. He saw it in the arrogant tilt of his Uncle Henry's chin. And sometimes, when she didn't think anyone was looking, he saw it flash in Amanda's eyes. Will couldn't live like that. He couldn't let the first 18 years of his life ruin the next 60. He reached into his pocket. The metal of the wedding ring was cold against his fingers. He held it out to Amanda.
I want you to take this.
Well, she pretended to be embarrassed as she took the ring. This is rather sudden. Our age difference is...
Will tried to take it back, but she wrapped her hand around his. Amanda Wagner was not an affectionate woman. She rarely touched Will in kindness. She punched his arm. She smacked his shoulder. She'd even once pulled back the safety plate on a nail gun and feigned surprise when the nail shot through the webbing between his thumb and index finger. But now, she held on to his hand. Her fingers were small, her wrist impossibly tiny. There was clear polish on her fingernails. Age spots dotted the back of her hand. Her shoulder leaned into his. Will gently returned the pressure. Her grip tightened for just a second before she let go. She said,
"You're a good boy, Wilbur."
Will didn't trust himself to respond without his voice cracking. Normally he would have made a joke about crying like a girl, but the phrase was a contradiction to the woman sitting beside him. Amanda said,
"We should go before Kitty turns the hose on us."
She dropped the ring into her purse as she stood from the bench. Instead of hefting the bag onto her shoulder, she gripped it in one hand. Will offered,
"Do you want me to carry that?"
"For God's sakes, I'm not an invalid."
She pulled the bag onto her shoulder as if to prove a point.
"Button your collar. You weren't raised in a barn. And don't think we've had our last conversation on the subject of your hair."
Will buttoned his collar as he walked with her to her car. Kitty Treadwell stood at the open front door, watching them carefully. A cigarette hung from her lips. Smoke curled up into her eye. She said,
"I paid the property taxes."
Amanda was reaching for the car door. She stopped.
"On the Techwood house."
Kitty walked down the stairs. She stopped a few feet from the car.
"I paid the taxes. Worth every penny. It chapped Henry's ass when James sold it."
"Mine too," Amanda admitted. $4 million is quite a profit."
"Money's the only thing Henry understands."
Kitty took the cigarette out of her mouth. "I thought it would go to Wilbur."
"He doesn't want it," Amanda said.
"No." Kitty smiled at Will. It gave him a cold feeling inside. "You turned out better than all of us." "How on earth did that happen?"
Will couldn't answer her. He couldn't even bear to look at her. Amanda asked,
"Hank met Ulster at the soup kitchen?"
Kitty reluctantly turned back to Amanda.
"He was looking for Lucy. He wanted to make sure she wouldn't lay claim to their parents' estate. It must have seemed like a match made in heaven."
She held the cigarette to her lips.
"They struck a grand bargain. Hank gave him Lucy. No strings attached. In return, Ulster got me off the dope. Though I don't recommend his methods."
She smiled, as if this was all a joke. "I suppose James thought Lucy was a good trade, a fallen angel with no parents or family to make a stink." She huffed out some smoke. "And besides, Mary wasn't really doing it for him anymore."
"Why did he kill her?"
"Mary," Kitty shrugged, "she couldn't be broken. something about being pregnant changes you. At least, it seems that way from the outside. Commendable, but look where it got her.
And Jane Delray?
Oh, they fought constantly about Jane. Henry wanted her out of the way. She wouldn't shut up. She kept telling anyone who would listen about Lucy, about Mary, about me. I suppose I was lucky I didn't meet the same end. I was constantly throwing around my father's name. She stuttered a laugh. As if anyone in the ghetto gave a rat's ass who my father was.
They fought about it, Amanda echoed.
James didn't care who that little slut talked to. He got quite high and mighty about it, unsurprisingly. He was doing the Lord's work, after all. He wasn't a hired killer. God was going to protect him. Amanda made the obvious connection.
You were kept in the house with Lucy.
Yes. I was there the whole time. She seemed to be waiting for Amanda to ask another question. The entire time. Amanda said nothing. Anyway. Kitty tapped some ash onto the driveway. I reconciled with my father at the end. She huffed a bitter laugh. More money for Henry's coffers. What's the saying? God doesn't close a door without first nailing shut all the windows. Amanda offered.
If you testify, I can...
You can't really do anything. We both know that.
You can leave him. You can leave him right now.
Why would I do that? She seemed genuinely perplexed. He's my husband. I love him. Her matter-of-fact tone was as shocking as anything Will had heard today. She really seemed to want an answer. Amanda asked,
How could you? After all he did.
Kitty snarled out a long stream of smoke. You know how it is with men. She flicked the cigarette into the yard. Sometimes it's criminal what a woman has to do. 33. Present day. 1 week later. Sarah's greyhounds had been spoiled rotten. Will had started giving them cheese, which Sarah had discovered the hard way. Apparently it was an ongoing thing. The dogs were obsessed. The minute they recognized Will's street, they started pulling on their leashes like huskies running the Klondike. By the time she got to his driveway, Sarah's arms felt as if they'd been ripped out of the sockets. She gripped the leashes in one hand as she dug around in her pocket for the key to Will's house. Thankfully, his Porsche pulled up behind her. He waved as he pulled past. The dogs pounced.
Look at you,
Will cooed. He rubbed the dogs up and down.
Aren't you good boys?
They're nasty, Sarah said. No more cheese. Will was laughing when he stood up.
Dogs need cheese. They can't find it in the wild.
Sarah opened her mouth to counter his argument, but he kissed her so long and so well that she didn't care anymore. Will smiled down at her.
Did you hear back from your cousin?
We can have his beach house the whole week. His smile turned into a grin. He took the leashes. The dogs were considerably better behaved as they led Will up the walkway. Sarah couldn't help but think how much better Will looked. He was back at his real job. He was sleeping through the night. He wasn't so shell-shocked anymore. Will waited until Sarah had closed the front door to let the dogs off their leashes. They bolted to the kitchen. But Will didn't follow them. He told Sarah,
Henry's arraignment is next week.
We can postpone the beach if... No. She watched him empty his pockets, putting his keys and money on the desk. How's the case going?
Henry's fighting it, but you can't argue with DNA.
He slid his paddle holster off his belt.
What about you? How was your day?
I need to tell you something. He looked wary.
Sarah couldn't blame him. He'd had enough bad news lately.
Your father's talk screen came back. Will straightened the pen on his desk.
What did they find?
He had Demerol in his bloodstream. Not a lot. He gave her a careful look.
Pills?
Medical grade. Injectable. He asked.
How much is not a lot?
He was a big guy, so it's hard to be sure. I'd guess enough to make him relax, but not knock him out completely.
She said, they found the vial in the refrigerator under the bar. There was a syringe in the disposal box with residue. His fingerprints were on both.
Will rubbed the side of his face with his fingers.
He never used drugs before. That was his thing. He was against them.
You know how bad prisons are. A lot of people change their minds about drugs when they get inside.
Where would he get liquid Demerol?
Sarah cast about for an explanation.
The prostitute who visited him the night before could have brought it. Did the police ever find her?
No, Will answered.
They never found the nail polish either.
Sarah knew Will hated loose ends. Maybe she stole it. Most of those girls are addicts. They're not having sex with 20 to 30 men a day because it's fun.
What was the cause of death?
He seemed wary of saying the word.
Overdose?
His heart wasn't in great shape. You know these things aren't always conclusive. The medical examiner listed natural causes, but he could have had other drugs on board. Inhaled something, swallowed something, had a bad reaction. It's impossible to test for everything.
Did Pete handle the case?
No, he's taken medical leave. It was one of his assistants. He's a smart guy. I trust him.
Will kept working his jaw. Did he suffer?
I don't know, she admitted.
I wish I could tell you.
Betty barked. She pranced around Will's feet.
I'd better feed them.
He headed toward the kitchen. Sarah followed him. Instead of picking up the bowls and getting out the cans from the cabinet, Will stood in the middle of the room. There was a padded envelope on his kitchen table. A bright red lipstick print kissed the center. Sarah instantly recognized Angie Trent's handiwork. She'd found a note with the same lipstick kiss on her car every morning this week. She doubted very seriously that Angie had written whore inside, but she asked Will anyway.
What does she want? I have no idea.
Will sounded angry, then defensive, as if he could control his wife.
I changed the locks. I don't know how she got in.
Sarah didn't bother to respond. Angie was an ex-cop. She knew how to pick a lock. Working vice, she'd learned how to skate back and forth across the lines with impunity.
Will said, I'll throw it away.
She tried to quell her irritation. It's all right.
No, it's not.
Will picked up the envelope. It wasn't sealed. The flap opened. Sarah jumped back, though what clattered onto the table was hardly dangerous. At least, not anymore. The prostitute at the Four Seasons had been the last person to see Will's father alive. She knew the regular girls. She knew how they dressed, where they picked up their johns. More important, she knew that adjusting her hat in full view of the elevator security camera would draw attention to her recently manicured fingernails. And that still wasn't enough. Like a cat leaving a dead animal on its owner's doorstep, Angie Trent had taken a souvenir from the crime scene so that Will would know exactly what she'd done for him. Glass bottle, pointy white cap. Bombshell red. It was the missing bottle of Max Factor nail polish.
This is Kathleen Early. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Criminal, a Novel by Karen Slaughter. Presented by HarperCollins and Harper Audio. This program was produced by Dion Audio Services. The director was Vanessa Melendez. Executive producer, Suzanne Franco Mitchell. Text copyright 2012 by Karen Slaughter Publishing, LLC. Production copyright 2018 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.